Welcome to another week and another episode of Fed Ninjas. We are joined by Birdie Green again. It is always a pleasure to have Birdie with us. Birdie, I appreciate your time. How you have been, my friend?
Life is good. I've missed hanging out with you guys, so thanks for having me back. Looking forward to chatting some more.
We had some good conversations prior to this, and one of the things that came up was the topic of AI guardrails. With the advancement of AI, everyone's been impacted by this. There's a lot of foreign investment and a number of other dynamics that are coming into this. And that topic of AI guardrails is pretty front and center right now. Would love to get your take on this. What are AI guardrails, Birdie?
So the term guardrails often is referring to ensuring the large language model stays in the lanes. Think of it like bumper bowling. Like, how do I make sure the ball doesn't go in the gutter? And the gutter being an unintended process for the large language model. So that's what people mean when they're talking about guardrails. The stuff that we've been working on, it is in that field, but also helping customers make sure they're adopting the technology holistically within the organization, which includes things like policy writing. Like, you're going to have acceptable use policies for your end users. You're going to have incident response plans based on technology failure or breach. And looking at it holistically like that, how do you bring it into the fold? The challenge that our friend Sandy Dunn often talks about is you want to encourage and help people adopt AI, but you don't want it to be its own thing. You want it to be within your plans. It is just a piece of technology. So don't overdo it. Don't overturn in how you're trying to support AI. Bring it into your policies, bring it into your incident response plan, your CMDB, monitor for its use, a lot like you would for SaaS back in the day with CASB tools. So it's challenging because a lot of customers now have funding, which is, it's not a challenge, that's a great thing. Customers have funding to do AI, but now the question is, how do we get started in a secure way?
And man, how do you get started in a secure way? That's a great, you brought the next question on yourself.
I guess it depends on the customer. We've talked about this topic before on when we're talking about how to use AI. Are we talking about building large language model services for our employees or for our customers? Are we talking about how to use commodity, third-party LLMs internally at our organization? And more often than not, it's the latter. It's people trying to understand how to use Copilot because they have Microsoft 365. But all of that to be said, it really is important figuring out what your use case is first, which I think any technologist would tell you for any technology topic, not just AI, but what is it we're trying to do here? I know Eric was around for the big data era, and that was a lot of, hey, there's so much value locked within our data. We need to create a big data model and all this stuff. Yes, possibly. But if you're going to spend all this money on infrastructure and services and retooling your employees, what is it we're trying to do first? How do we know the juice is worth the squeeze? And I feel like AI is very much the same thing. It's big data, but just with a chat prompt.
I love that term, the juice is worth the squeeze. Eric, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts as well, because it was a pretty robust conversation prior to us beginning the podcast.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, hey, great to hear from you again, Birdie. And really your experience with boots on the ground and seeing a lot of these really technology-inspired challenges with AI that customers are having that you're seeing are very good to take apart and understand. What you said with companies really need to have planning around AI rather than just let the technology take off by itself. And now that we're seeing a lot of very large scale world type of budget behind AI and building AI and putting it into all of these large companies that are going to be operating critical infrastructure, this is very important to understand. The planning has to occur before it's implemented. We have to have these correct guardrails or bumpers in place and have a plan of what successful AI implementation looks like, and then to be able to go back and have a risk management point of view and say, is this what we intended on using AI for, and is it working correctly? Are we retrieving only pieces of data we're supposed to? Are we allowing others to retrieve only pieces of data they're supposed to? Are we getting the correct results? Are we testing this frequently to understand if what we send in a prompt and what we return back is correct? So it's almost like we're doing either tabletop or functional tests at a recurring interval, like a continuous monitoring type of strategy. And are we monitoring it? Are we ensuring things aren't being injected into it? So there's so many different things that have to happen as a planning part of this and looking at risk management for AI. So I guess my question to you, Bertie, is how are companies approaching this, understanding that there has to be a program established to manage AI security correctly?
That's a great question, and it's so across the board. I guess I'll just start going through some different personas that I'm seeing. The one that I'm a big fan of a company that can find a way to leverage SaaS AI services. And I'll use one example is Poly AI. Poly AI is a phone chatbot, what do you want to call it? Like a call center chatbot kind of deal. And so it has the text chat prompt, yes, but it also provides like an interactive voice that can hop on the phone and take level one tickets and things like that. I love that use case for anyone who has a lot of level one ticketing, 24/7 support, anything like that. Oftentimes, there are level two or level three support analysts that are a little more challenging to employ and find and employ those folks. So being able to focus your efforts on level two, level three, and maintaining level one just with a chatbot that's done in a secure fashion is awesome. That so people that are able to look at that, and there's hard ROI around basically what their call volumes can look like if they start leveraging third-party AI services. In a lot of those cases too, you have financial advisors and people like that that are very hard to employ in those call centers. So it allows you to really focus on the unique skill sets you need to employ in those call center environments. That's somewhat of an easier use case to me, as opposed to how do we unleash AI within our company using Copilot? That would be the next persona that we're seeing a lot of. And I'll put it this way that Maurice, there's plenty of times you've probably shared files or things like that with people, and you've clicked anyone at my company or public link because it makes it easier because you don't know who's going to have to access the file. In that circumstance, there's a chance somebody comes across that link and basically has access to something they shouldn't. But with a chat prompt, I can just say, hey, find all publicly accessible links, you know, and it basically makes it an inevitability if I'm using a chat bot that I'm going to come across sensitive data, as opposed to before where it was accidental or opportunistic that I would come across something sensitive.
It's scary because I just had something like that this morning. I was doing something on one of the AI platforms and it was in ironically editing a podcast. And then it said export. And I thought that meant to my computer. Nope, created a link and it threw it out there. And
Uh-oh, we
that,
got a data breach.
right, data breach. And for a novice like myself, I'm not one of the deep-rooted cybersecurity experts like you folks, but that was an honest mistake. And I'm wondering how often it happens and how often that puts companies or even individuals at risk.
Well, that,
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Derek. Sorry.
yeah, sorry, Brady, just to highlight that and really allowing the end employees to understand how these work correctly. And I know that's a blog post on our FedNinja site about training for responsible use of AI is really a part of that on how end users are able to use the interface and understand how they're able to share, what they're able to share. And of course, those guardrails should be established with proper tagging to make sure that they can't accidentally share things that they're not supposed to. But that is a great example. And also, just to follow up on Bertie's example of the chatbots, that's almost like when you first went to the grocery stores and you were able to check out by yourself, use self-checkout, right? That enables the employer to be able to scale and be able to say, look, we've got six or seven or eight or nine or 10 of these checkout stands that people can just use. We don't have to staff them, but we do have oversight over them. So with AI chatbots, hopefully there's oversight of a person that's watching these, that's responsible for maybe a group of them, making sure that they retrieve the proper information, and they can do audits of them continually to make sure it's working correctly. So I think that there's a lot of, we could talk about scenarios all day, but there's a lot of interesting facets with how we should put these guardrails in training, and also the tagging, and as well as people monitoring these systems at all times to make sure that it's not going off the rails, really.
Yes. And there, at least for the one product I was referencing before, the Poly AI product, there is an iterative feedback loop. And so every month you sit down and look at the feedback from your customers' call times, and you basically are saying, what do we need to tweak? A lot of this technology has been always to me, basically setting up guardrails for how you want people to behave. You want to encourage the right behavior with the tool, but not be too restrictive. And so it is a balance beam, and this feels very much the same.
This almost goes into some of Marisa's area of expertise too, with human resources and that organizational management. Because if you look at it that way, it's continuous improvement. And look at some of the things like Jack Welch and GE with the aircraft engines and Six Sigma and defect management. Because if you're continually improving AI and you're constantly evaluating and interrogating the results and what you're getting compared to what you expected to get, and you get to that threshold of defect management, I think that if you approach it that way, it's a better way that management would feel better about implementing it rather than, oh, wow, we're going to, this thing's going to explode and take us over at some point. What are your thoughts, Maurice, on an organizational management view of
Well,
that?
you do bring up something worth considering. So when you look at things like, for instance, Six Sigma, even though that was more about the process improvement, making sure that, to your point, defects, if you look at Six Sigma itself, I think it was 3.4 defects per million, if I remember correctly. It was decades ago by this point, but that's critical. Absolutely critical if you're building something like an airplane, that you want to eliminate defects, and that's huge. But you probably wouldn't need that same defect rate when you're making Cheerios. And so within the
I agree.
within the yeah so within the light of AI, where would it be critical? So in the case of the thing that I did this morning, it's probably not going to be catastrophic that this if something had access, we're going to throw out the podcast anyway. So honest mistake, if someone hears, oh funny, that's on another format, if that was an NSA document
Yep. Yeah,
that would have been
absolutely.
awful. So from an organizational standpoint, we need to set the parameters of what do we absolutely need to guard against? Because then that would initiate what type of training, what type of responsibilities, what types of precautions that we need to take that we might not need to take when I had intended to release a podcast. Does that make sense?
See, Maurice is actually a cybersecurity expert because he just described a risk scale in a matrix. Because you're taking like impact level and yeah, the level of impact and security controls that are needed based on it. And so, really, it's a sliding scale within an organization. You can say, oh, wow, this is our financial data and forecast data. This is our intellectual property. That's going to be high end off the scale. Or with critical infrastructure, warfighter systems, things that are very high, that's going to be at the high end of the scale. Thus, it's going to need more scrutiny. But then you've got some of the low end things like, hey, we're planning on what we're going to get for lunch today. So that's going to be on the very other end of the scale. But that's a great example, Maurice. Not everything needs the same attention. And so, really, with AI planning, you could have that same type of matrix that gives you within our organization, here's the things that are super important. We can't mess up with AI. Here's some of the things that, yeah, if it goes bad, I'm going to get a turkey salad instead of a, I don't know, steak salad. So no big deal.
Yeah, and what you're talking, there's kind of two ways that manifest to me too, Maurice. There's the human behavior side, which has history, the Six Sigma history you're talking about, and AI that's also talking about what's the rate of hallucination. How often is this large language model going outside of the data it's been provided and speaking authoritatively and making stuff up? So there'd be both the human side and the AI hallucination risk appetite.
Wow, you know what? I would have never even thought about that, of the AI part taking things casually, if I hear that correctly. I mean,
And
is
there's
it?
tools out there to help with that, to make sure there's no hallucinations. So there's if this is a high sensitive task, so let's use the call center employees. If I'm a level one call center employee and I'm helping you find the account page, like not a big deal. But if
Right.
I'm all of a sudden talking to you about your last transactions and if you want to change any account numbers, then we better have a very low, or excuse me, a high sensitivity to risk and make sure that we're doing it correctly both on the human and AI side. So the
Wow.
same topic, just doing a different task.
That's fascinating. That was a quiet pause, though, as well. So, Eric,
I just
how
heard
about yourself?
hallucinations and I realize we're talking on a Monday morning when we're discussing this. So I'm thinking I need another Coke Zero or something. So
And
more caffeine.
one
Man.
thing I think, if I can pivot, similar topic, but something that is encouraging are the number of frameworks out there now to help with AI. We were looking at this last week. How do we structure artificial intelligence go-to-market campaigns and things like that? So NIST has an artificial intelligence risk management framework. ISO has 42001 they're using for AI management systems. OWASP, top 10 for LLMs, is out there. They have their security checklist, which our friend Sandy Dunn helped author. And then I found a really awesome Cloud Security Alliance security architecture review for AI. So that's encouraging to me. Those are all very reputable sources. They're collaboration forums. It's not one person just dictating. And so the fact that the smart scientist brains are coming together and starting to put frameworks around this is very encouraging to me.
That's a huge part about Bernie because those are established organizations and they're what are being used to be able to grade and audit systems in both federal and commercial critical infrastructure. And so we use these worldwide ISO 27001 and then all of its different subsets for privacy and AI. And then with NIST, of course, and there's, like you said, there's many people collaborating. I know just going past the NIST building in Baltimore there and all of the other buildings that are associated with that, there's a lot of super smart people continuously working on that. And then, of course, OWASP with what they've done with application security and then bringing AI into it and all the folks we know there. They're really putting huge efforts. You bring that under the umbrella of, look, yeah, this is fairly recent technology. And we're bringing it in as a part of a regular structured security council to make sure that it's running correctly so that it's a part of the entire ecosystem.
Exactly. That was Sandy's call out years ago, was there needs to be governance around this, but don't create a separate program. Don't treat it differently. Treat it like everything else that we do. So it's very cool to see that happening. It's part of an ecosystem. It shouldn't be in a vacuum.
100% agree.
This is fascinating because there are so many implications for just the rapid growth of AI. We've talked about that. I believe we've talked about this, so I might be, this might be the Monday blues, but the blue ocean strategies, how blue ocean is where everything's open and you happen to go out there and ocean is blue and you find a fish and you catch the fish. And then you bring it in, a little blood gets in the water, and all of a sudden you have sharks everywhere, and all of a sudden the water's red. And we're fast, it's fast going into that red ocean type of market there. And so these precautions are incredibly vital at this point in time. I look at the things that my kids are going through with AI, and I have to wonder what's going on out there. And so I know we've talked about that, but it is a very important topic with, again, some implications for not only businesses, but even from a personal level too. So very fascinating here, this discussion.
Maurice,
There's some. Yeah, go ahead. You go, Birdie.
I don't want to forget this one. You just mentioned students. And so I did see an article, and I'll admit, I read the headline. So I'm missing context, and that's on me. But I did see that a lot of students are being caught now using artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, as part of their papers, their final submission papers for graduation and stuff. And this very much feels like the calculator where you just have to, you just have to, I'm not trying to make that sound easy. You have to adjust the method you test people because you can't say you don't use a calculator for these things. The calculator is going to be available in the real circumstance in life. And so how do you train people and encourage them to use things appropriately? I use ChatGPT every single day, but I am not throwing sensitive data in and then copy pasting result out. I'm providing guidance to a system that includes nothing sensitive, and then I'm using that to create my own content. You still have to be part of that, but it doesn't, you still have to be responsible and validate the information you're putting out in the world.
Just to add to Bertie what he had mentioned on that, now I'm seeing a lot of schools and teachers that are requiring people to use AI, which is smart. But I think that the part that really I hope is being implemented, and I hear that it is, but I see this in my own use of AI every day, is yes, you can generate a lot of things really quickly and then be able to validate them. And hopefully the prompt that you put in was very targeted to what you wanted. And then, of course, it's going to be slightly different. So you have to adjust a lot of things. But also, if you produce something, so say you're a student in school, you should be able to stand behind that and speak to it. You should be able to speak to everything that you've put on there and also add your own human flavor and perspective to it to be able to say that you know what you're talking about with that content that you've created. So it's almost like a book report. You read the book, the teacher asks you, hey, did you read the book? And so you give a book report, a short recital on what you learned about the book. You give your own human insight about it too, because also you have human feelings, emotions, and different parts and interactions that you've had with previous experiences that you're able to relay to other humans. And that's the big part. But then also, so you were talking about earlier some other things, Maurice, about personal experiences with AI. And now we're seeing interesting articles about how AI is better at persuading people than people are at persuading people. So if you think the first thing I think about is, oh, hey, what about your car's extended warranty? It's up and you need to renew it, right? You get that phone call or letter in the mail and you're like, oh, wow, is this legit? My car's gonna, the motor's gonna die in it and I need to pay this. And so those are obviously persuasive type of communications to people, and they probably are scams more than likely. I don't know what those people are doing. I just ignore them. But however, with AI, think of all the power behind it and the interaction ability in a one-to-one conversation with a person, whether it's a chat bot or let's say it's telephony type of AI system that's really good, that sounds like a real person, and they're able to retrieve answers quickly and they have all of that information. They're able to persuade people like right away with very convincingly that they have to do something. And think of social engineering where hackers have those tactics of being convincing, having it be urgent, something of action right away. If AI is super good at this, like 100x, 1000x than humans, then we probably have a real problem on our hands where really the public needs to be educated, like everybody, not just people who are into technology. But think about your grandparents, parents, other relatives that might not be very technology oriented, saying, look, here's traditional means that you might be approached, but it could be AI behind it that's trying to convince you and persuade you to take action on something or to make a big decision. And so you have to really converse. You should, I feel, converse with other humans and other experts. AI is always good to get information about, ask questions about, but really being able to find multiple sources of ingestion, kind of like a security incident event management platform. That's how I think of it, is we are people who consume information and we can filter that information and rank it and prioritize it. And so we should be able to take that best information and make our own assumptions about it.
It's really hard to teach if you feel like you're being asked to forfeit logic to make an emergency decision, there's a high chance you're being scammed.
Agree. 100%.
This is fascinating, and we need to revisit this. And it's amazing how fast the time goes when we're having fun. So, let's definitely pick up where we left off next time we meet, and definitely have some other additions, not only to this topic, but let's definitely brainstorm some other pieces as well, because I cannot believe how many things are now out there when it comes to AI.
Absolutely. Hey, and it's exciting to have Birdie back on. Haven't chatted with him, so excited to hear about all of his adventures out in the field. What he's doing is super exciting, so good to hear from you again. Can't wait to chat again.
You guys as well. Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to the next chat.